I want to talk about this scourge of pro-abortion, and I was actually kind of appalled, though I guess not surprised, on how many Christians actually claim a pro-abortion view, and still. Now, I'm not going to say that you can be saved and be pro-abortion, but I don't really believe that you can necessarily be a Christian in the sense that you're a strict follower of Christ, because it goes against. What do you need? I mean, it goes against the Bible. It goes clearly against his teachings about how we're supposed to treat children. It goes against the commandment in the Bible not to kill, not to murder. And the only way that you can have a moral outlook on abortion is if you if you convince yourself that the life in the womb is not really a life, but a potential life. And that's not the case, because we're just strictly from a Christian perspective, we're all born and we're all made in the image of God, right? So what is the image of God? A lot of people will say that, well, it's consciousness, or it's the ability to think, or it's self-awareness or something like that. Well, if that were the case, then a coma patient would lose the being made in the image of God part of him. So it's not that. It can't be that. It's something that you have from the moment you come into existence, which would be conception. It's not potential. Again, it can't be potential, because a baby in the womb, is, as far as we know, we don't know what level of consciousness they have, babies in the womb. But even if you say a baby in the womb is fully conscious to the point that we understand consciousness, well, that only proves the point. If you say that the baby is not conscious, well, then why does a coma patient get to still claim the image of God if they're a Christian? Yet the unborn baby in the womb can't. So there are a lot of illogical, there's a lot of fallacies that come up when thinking in terms of being pro-abortion and being a Christian. It really doesn't fit. It doesn't mesh. I've never heard a single coherent argument for it. But there is a scourge of pro-abortion, and this has to be the central issue for Christians and conservatives alike. Now, to be frank, I really don't care for the term pro-choice, because the truth is we're all in favor of certain choices when it comes to the unborn. We actually only differ on one of the choices. So the choice we differ on is literally life and death. That's the choice that we differ on. The pro-life stance offers several choices to women when it comes to making a decision that could result in the conception of a human being. Okay, there's a lot of choices. There's adoption, contraception, abstinence, and of course, motherhood. Those are four choices. But the only choice the pro-life stance does not consider reasonable is the fifth choice, murder. That's the only part. So therefore, both sides of this argument are pro-choice. They each just have a very different view as to what constitutes a human life and, by extension, murder. Now, the reason this issue is so important and should be taken more seriously than any other issue is because of the pro-life definition. If the pro-life definition of human life is correct, let's say that it is, then abortion is responsible for over 60 million deaths since Roe v. Wade. Since the Roe v. Wade decision to legalize abortion in 1973. And by contrast, the Holocaust was responsible for an estimated 11 to 17 million deaths, 6 million of which were Jews. The highest estimates of death attributed to Joseph Stalin were between 20 and 30 million. Even Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward policy, resulting in what is largely accepted as the biggest episode of mass murder ever recorded, comes in at up to 45 million deaths. Still fewer than abortion. If human life has intrinsic value in the womb, then abortion is responsible for the largest case of mass murder ever committed against the human race. Now, to a pro-abortionist, the unborn baby in the womb is not a real human being. Human rights begin at birth rather than conception. However, this view is littered with inconsistencies that are fairly easy to point out. For example, most in the political left who are in favor of abortion would agree slavery is a very harmful and destructive part of American and European history. Now, much of what spurred on slavery was the idea that people of other strange cultures were less than human and more comparable to animals. Many believed these newly discovered people lacked a human soul. Christians even debated whether or not to even bother sharing the gospel with them. Seeing them as non-human beings made it easier to enslave them. So thinking of them as animals made it easier to treat them as such. Now, most on the political left and, well, really right for that matter, lament the choices made by our ancestors and would wish, if they didn't know, they would have erred on the side of caution. You know, if the people back then didn't know if people of other races were human or not, then it would have been better to err on the side of caution and treat them as human until they developed scientific studies or something, until they were able to prove it or whatever. But the left would agree that if there was a debate whether these biological entities were human or not, it would have been better to assume humanity. Any conceived consequences of calling them human would be far less extreme than the horrors which came from assuming they were not human. So pro-abortionists will generally agree to that premise. Yet, when it comes to abortion, they are not willing to remain consistent and assume humanity. They will not err on the side of caution. If we really don't know when life begins, whether at conception or at birth, it clearly would be better to assume humanity begins at conception. As with slavery, any conceived consequences that could arise from assuming humanity at conception are far less extreme than the mass murder of over 60 million people as a result of assuming babies in the womb are not really human. It is far better to err on the side of caution. Now, an argument that frequently comes from pro-abortion people is that a fetus in the womb is not really a human, but a potential human. Though this term is never really clearly defined. When does a potential human become a human? Is it at birth? What about premature babies born weeks earlier than they were supposed to be? Is sustainability the issue? If a baby can survive on its own outside of the womb, is that when it is considered to be a human? And what about an adult coma patient? We talked about that just a minute ago, who cannot survive on his own. If sustainability is the issue, is he now no longer considered human? Apparently not, because there are still laws protecting the lives of premature babies and coma patients. We even have laws protecting the eggs of certain wildlife, like alligators and endangered birds and things. If a fetus in the womb is considered potential life and is therefore meaningless, consistency would dictate that this definition would stretch across all species capable of producing potential life. However, you would be hard-pressed to find any pro-abortionist who thinks that it should be legal to destroy bald eagle eggs, for example. We have very strict laws protecting the potential life, according to the pro-abortionist definition, of bald eagles, but not for our own species, not for humankind. Now, another extremely weak, yet unfortunately common, argument for abortion in an attempt to show the hypocrisy of pro-lifers goes something like this. You want to protect the babies in the womb, but once they're born, you don't care about them at all. Now, this argument is usually an attempt to call out conservatives for not wanting their taxes to pay for government funding programs and things like that. But once again, this line of logic remains inconsistent. Let's say you see someone trapped in a burning building. You rush in, you save them. Are you now financially responsible for that person for the rest of your life just because you wanted to save their life? Should every doctor who has ever saved someone's life be financially responsible for their patients? Or if somebody saves a baby from drowning, are they now the baby's caretaker forever? There is no other part of American law or culture or reasonability or logic that would work like that. Yet this argument is repeated frequently. Even Joy Behar stupidly claimed it on The View a couple of months ago. But just because we want babies to live and not die does not mean that we are obligated to financially support them. That is the job of the family. All right. Now, inevitably, when the abortion issue is raised, someone brings up rape, incest, and possible health issues. But the truth is, studies show that this is rarely, if ever, the reason for abortion. So according to a compiled estimate percentages with the range of value given in parentheses, when you actually look up this statistic, the reason for abortion in the U.S. breaks down as such, and I'll read it in a minute, but this comes from johnstonsarchive.net/policy/abortion/abrasion. So if you want to look up the statistic, you can. Rape is 0.3%, not even 1%. It's 0.3%, and it's in a range of 0.1 to 0.6. Incest, again, 0.3%, and it is in a range of 0.01 to 0.1%. So 0.03. Oh, it's not 0.3. Excuse me. Incest is 0.03. Physical life of the mother, that is 0.1%, within a range of 0.01 to 0.2%. Physical health of the mother is 0.8%. So, and that is 0.1 to 3%. Fetal health is 0.5%, 0.1 to 1%. And elective, 98.3%, or 87 to 99%. So that's convenience. It's not health issues. It's not rape. It's not incest. It's not physical life of the mother, physical health of the mother, fetal health. It's not anything like that. 98.3% of abortions occur because of elective. Now, what is elective? We can break that down. The category of elective in this study includes too young, immature, or not ready for responsibility, economic, to avoid adjusting life. The mother is single or in a poor relationship. The mother has enough children already. Sex selection or selective reduction. So even though rape, incest, and threats to physical life or health are commonly used as arguments to support abortion, these by and large are not the reasons abortion services are utilized. And a way you can tell that pro-abortionists actually do not typically care about these horrific issues is you can ask them, if given the chance, if pro-lifers agreed to allow abortion only for rape, incest, and threat to life or health, would you then give up elective abortion? Not a single one of them would take that deal. Because again, they would be cutting out 98.7% or 98.3% of their abortions, excuse me. Not a single one of them would take that deal. And by the way, we should never take that deal either. That's a terrible deal. Now, you know, of course it would save lives, but still, it's a good thought exercise to point out the inconsistencies in the pro-abortion argument concerning rape, incest, and threat to life or health. There are no pro-abortion. They are not pro-abortion because of these tragic, yet extremely rare instances. Now, the pro-abortion stance is not based in logic or reason, but instead is based on emotion and faith, actually. Faith that a fetus in the womb is not a human. Faith that it is not murder to strip a baby from its mother's womb. Faith that there is no God to judge these things. Faith that morality is relative. Faith that there is no objective right or wrong. But the thing is, we Christians have faith too. We have faith in the opposite of all of those things. The difference is, however, we do not have to bring our faith into the pro-life argument at all. Sometimes we as Christians will do that, but we don't actually have to do that. Our position does not have to hinge on faith. Our position can be thoroughly explained logically, reasonably, and scientifically without having to bring in our personal beliefs of God or even Christianity. Now, as you'll notice, until now, I have not focused too heavily on the Bible or God throughout this abortion topic. I did a little bit in the beginning, but most of the arguments, even though I'm talking mostly to a Christian audience, most of the arguments are based in just reason and logic. And I did this to show that we can debate these things on the left's own terms. We can go onto their own land intellectually. and argue these things. If they don't believe in a God, fine. Let's argue these things scientifically. But even if there was no God, our position still holds true. Even if the Bible is full of errors and deemed unreliable, our position still holds true. Even if Christianity is full of bullies and tyrants who did nothing else but oppress people all throughout history, still our position holds true. It has nothing to do with the content of our character. It's based in science, logic, and reason. And it does, and the pro-abortionist argument does not hold up to scrutiny against these things. Now, of course, there are many, many very legitimate spiritual reasons to oppose abortion, and many arguments that can be made from the Bible and God's clear wishes on the matter. And if a Christian is considering supporting abortion, we absolutely should utilize those arguments. And I mentioned a few of those at the beginning. However, this is rare. This is still rare. Most often, it's people who do not accept God or religion of any kind who support abortion. You can have a pro-life atheist. There are actually many out there. Yet you can't really have a pro-abortion Christian. Now, again, that I'm not putting salvation in that. The way that I look at it, somebody can be saved. But what it means to be a Christian is to take the next step and to follow Christ and to mirror your ideals with his. And every day of your life, you're trying to get better. So just being saved and being a Christian is two different things. You can take a job and quit the next day and still technically you had that job, or you can keep that job and make that your career. You could think of it like that. So that's why I say you can't really have a pro-abortion Christian, somebody who's actually following Christ and the teachings of the Bible, especially with something as foundational as what life is and if murder is wrong. Now, this is why in this video I presented these arguments outside of spirituality by and large. Christian arguments against abortion are important, but they are really only effective by and large with other Christians. A non-believer could certainly hear some good Christian arguments, become convicted, accept Jesus and become pro-life, and we should celebrate every time that happens, yet it's better to have the best of both worlds. So individually, each and every one of us should put out the Christian response first, because our first priority should be to witness to people and make disciples of all nations, and that will fix a lot of the problems that we have with our opponents. But collectively, however, we should be ready for the debates when they come. The truth is, we can convince anyone of any belief system that abortion is wrong as long as that person is willing to meet us on the same ground of logic and reason and facts instead of relying on emotion. If they're not willing, then honestly, they have no place discussing or enforcing an opinion on the matter in the first place. The pro-life side has the most logical and consistent arguments on its side. The more we can share those arguments with the world while at the same time taking up the task of the Great Commission, the more lives we can hopefully save physically and eternally. So I wanted to talk about that. I am curious, as always, to know your opinions on this matter. Go ahead and leave me a comment in the comment section below. You can help fight against censorship by making a one-time donation or setting up a monthly donation to Josh Peck Disclosure at joshpeckdisclosure.com/donate. Or, for as little as $1 a month, you can become a Peck patron by heading over to patreon.com/joshpeck. As a Peck patron, you will be entered into contests to have your content featured on the Josh Peck Disclosure homepage, contribute chapters to a collaborative book with Josh Peck, and win a special Josh Peck collection full of materials worth hundreds of dollars. Also, for as little as $3 a month, you will have access to free downloads of Josh Peck books, such as Quantum Creation, Cherubim Chariots, and more. Josh Peck Disclosure is viewer-funded. Head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com for more information.
Right now, head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com, the central hub for everything Josh Peck Disclosure. Every day, you'll get brand new videos, podcasts, updates, and more. Make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Also, make sure you click the bell and select the option to always be notified when a new video is released. Follow Josh Peck Disclosure on Twitter at JPDisclosure and get involved with the show on our official Facebook page at facebook.com/joshpeckdisclosure. If you're on Steemit and prefer DTube, follow Josh Peck at steemit.com/@JoshPeck and make sure to upvote all Josh Peck Disclosure DTube videos. Keep checking back at joshpeckdisclosure.com for news, information, updates, and more.